Wisconsin or college football? Well, the way it's going, I think I need some binoculars, Stephen. I bet you can help me with that. Now, therefore, fear the Lord and serve Him in sincerity and in faithfulness. Joshua 24:14. Put away the gods that your fathers served beyond the river and in Egypt, and serve the Lord. And if it is evil in your eyes to serve the Lord, choose this day whom you will serve. Whether the gods your fathers served in the region beyond the river, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell, but as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Then the people answered, "Far be it from us that we should forsake the Lord to serve other gods. For it is the Lord our God who brought us and our fathers up from the land of Egypt out of the house of slavery, and who did those great signs in our sight and preserved us in all the way that we went and among all the peoples through whom we passed. And the Lord drove out before us all the peoples, the Amorites who lived in the land. Therefore, we also will serve the Lord, for He is our God." But Joshua said to the people, "You're not able to serve the Lord, for He's a holy God. He's a jealous God. He will not forgive your transgressions or your sins. If you forsake the Lord and serve foreign gods, then He will turn and do you harm and consume you after having done you good." And the people said to Joshua, "No, but we will serve the Lord." Then Joshua said to the people, "You are witnesses against yourselves that you have chosen the Lord to serve Him." And they said, "We are witnesses." He said, "Then put away the foreign gods that are among you and incline your heart to the Lord, the God of Israel." And the people said to Joshua, "The Lord our God we will serve, and His voice we will obey." So Joshua made a covenant with the people that day and put in place statutes and rules for them at Shechem. And Joshua wrote these words in the book of the law of God, and he took a large stone and set it up there under the terebinth that was by the sanctuary of the Lord. And Joshua said to all the people, "Behold, this stone shall be a witness against us, for it has heard all the words of the Lord that He spoke to us. Therefore, it shall be a witness against you, lest you falsely deal with your God." So Joshua sent the people away, every man to his inheritance. I think back over the last 46 3/4 years of my life, at least the parts that I can remember. And like anybody else in this room, our lives are filled every day with choices. I mean, from the moment we wake up in the morning to the moment we fall asleep at night, it is literally choice after choice after choice after choice. And I submit further that there's been no time like this moment right here in the 21st century when we have had more choice. Three words that will illustrate that reality. Welcome to Moe's. Right? I mean, from the moment you hit the door of that place, it's just a barrage of choices. And eventually, by the time I get halfway down the glass, I'm thinking, y'all just decide, I'm tired. I can't do this anymore. But it does illustrate our world, doesn't it? Some more important than others, but at every step of the way, we make choices. It's always been this way. Maybe you, like me, sometimes in a more contemplative mood, think back over life and some of the choices that have been made. I think back to that time that my friends came to the house after school. And in my house, and the same thing with my children, by the way, you're not allowed to have friends over if mom and or dad are not home. That's just a recipe for all kinds of disaster. And mom and dad were very firm about this rule, as are this mom and dad. And my friends came by one day, and they knew the rule, and it was really driving me crazy, and they were taunting me. And I think I've told this story before in another context. They were taunting me, so they're standing in my driveway, standing in my yard, and I'm telling them, you can't come in this house. In fact, you got to leave the property. My dad's going to kill me if he finds y'all here. And so they're throwing pine straw, and they're throwing pine cones at me, and they're tossing leaves, just trying to annoy me. And finally, I made a decision. I'm going to put an end to this. So the next item that was tossed, I reared back with everything I had and kicked it as hard as I could. And it was a rock about that big. Of course, I ended up in the emergency room. And what do they always ask you when you get there? Well, what'd you do, Mr. Gray? Kicked a rock. I think back to a weekend, late April 1987. Well, let's just say I wasn't living like I professed to live. And I remember making a decision to pick up a friend's car keys one night without his knowledge and to take that vehicle for a spin. That didn't turn out so well. And even to this day, 28 years later, I still can see the consequences, both good and bad, but the results of that one decision that was made. I remember the last Friday night in August of 1991 when I, with much fear and trepidation, made the decision that I was going to ask this beautiful woman over here to be my wife. And everything that's happened since then, all kind of going back to that moment when a choice was made. Small choices, large choices, in-between choices. We make them every single day. And each and every one of them in its own way has consequences. Some of them immediate, but all of them long-term. Genesis chapter 13 tells a story about where Abram and Lot are going to separate from one another. The story begins with these words, verse 1. So Abram went up from Egypt, he and his wife and all that he had, and Lot with him into the Negev, that's the wilderness or the desert. Now Abram was very rich in livestock, and it's important to note, Abram had a lot of stuff. God had blessed him tremendously in silver and in gold, and he journeyed on from the Negev as far as Bethel, to the place where his tent had been at the beginning, between Bethel and Ai, to the place where he had made an altar at the first. And there Abram called upon the name of the Lord. Significant for our story as well. And Lot, who went with Abram, also had flocks and herds and tents. He was quite wealthy as well. So that the land could not support both of them dwelling together, for their possessions were so great that they could not dwell together. This town's not big enough for the two of us, they might say to one another. And there was strife between the herdsmen of Abram's livestock and the herdsmen of Lot's livestock. At that time, the Canaanites and the Perizzites were dwelling in the land. Then Abram said to Lot, "Let there be no strife between you and me, and between your herdsmen and my herdsmen, for we are kinsmen. Is not the whole land before you? Separate yourself from me. If you take the left hand, then I will go to the right. Or if you take the right, then I will go to the left." Lot lifted up his eyes and saw that the Jordan Valley was well watered everywhere, like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt in the direction of Zoar. This was before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. So Lot chose for himself all the land, all the Jordan Valley, and Lot journeyed east. Thus they separated from each other. Abram settled in the land of Canaan, while Lot settled among the cities of the valley and moved his tent as far as Sodom. Now the men of Sodom were wicked, great sinners against the Lord. The Lord said to Abram after Lot had separated from him, lift up your eyes and look from the place where you are, northward and southward and eastward and westward. For all the land that you see I'll give to you and to your offspring forever. I will make your offspring as the dust of the earth, so that if one can count the dust of the earth, your offspring also can be counted. Arise, walk through the length, the breadth of the land, for I will give it to you. So Abram moved his tent and came and settled by the oaks of Mamre, which are at Hebron. And there he built an altar to the Lord. Choice. Choice made. In fact, a choice made that because we kind of know what goes on in the rest of the story, we know that the choice made is going to have significant and profound consequences for these who made the choice. Now, often when we talk about consequences, we think of that in a negative light, but there's a such thing as a positive consequence, right? Maybe unexpected windfall, we might call it instead. But consequences can be good. Consequences can be evil. Did you notice the difference in how Abram and Lot approached their choice? And really, that's the whole lesson right there. I could stop and sit down and we could go on and just think for a minute, ponder for a few moments, and look closely again at those 18 verses. And really, you only have to look at the first paragraph to see the difference in the way in which Lot and Abram approached this great choice that was coming. You notice that Abram simply said, you go right, I'll go left, you go left, I'll go right, whichever. But Abram approached God. Abram lifted up his eyes to the Lord and asked for the favor of God in making a choice that he was about to make, where he's going to move himself, his family, and everything earthly that he owned. If you notice in the next paragraph, Lot also lifts his eyes. But see, Lot lifts his eyes and he sees green valleys. He sees milk and honey. He sees greater and greater wealth. And so Lot says, I tell you what, I'm going that way. Lot, in this instance, doesn't talk to God. Lot makes a choice, maybe sometimes like we do. And what is it that happens when choices are made with only ourselves in mind? What is it that comes to us by way of consequence when choices are made with only an immediate result in mind? What happens in our lives when choices are made, maybe like Lot, with only money in mind? What happens in our lives when choices are made like Lot, in this case, with only that which we can see with our eyes in mind? What kind of consequences or long-term effects can we expect in life when choices are made with only physical results in mind? Or what about when we make choices with only this life in mind? You see, we know what's going to happen eventually with Lot's family, don't we? Of course, Moses lets us in on it in case we don't remember, or in case we need reminding. He gives us a little parenthetical statement that tells us, oh, by the way, this is before God destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. And then he also tells us in there that the men of Sodom were wicked. They were great, great sinners against the Lord. Things that apparently Lot had not considered, at least not carefully, because there are other things that he saw right before him. He said, I'm going to make this choice to do this right now because it's going to be of great benefit to me in this moment. Devil may care. And I wonder how often we make our choices with the same wisdom. Luke chapter 14, Jesus is speaking. That great topic of discipleship that we discussed a little bit last week, last Sunday night. Verse 25, Luke tells us, now great crowds accompanied him. And he turned and he said to them, and this always struck me. And here's why this text has always struck me. And the more I read it, the more frightening it is, because it seems like in almost every other circumstance where Jesus is giving a very difficult teaching, it's to those who are closest to him. Usually it's not the crowd in general, probably an exception or two that I'm missing. But usually when it's a really, really tough thing that Jesus has to say, he's got those 12 right there around him, or maybe even he's got the three, Peter, James, and John, right? The inner circle. Rarely, if ever, is it the crowd, but here it's the crowd. In fact, Luke says it's a great crowd that's following Jesus. And now Jesus turns to them, and in my mind, you know how I read that? I don't read he turns to them, he kind of turns on them, if you listen to what he says. He says, if anyone comes to me, if anyone comes to me and does not hate his own father and mother and wife and children and brothers and sisters, yes, and even his own life, he cannot be my disciple. Whoever does not bear his own cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. For which of you, now he tells a story, which of you desiring to build a tower does not first sit down and count the cost, whether he has enough to complete it? Otherwise, when he's laid a foundation and is not able to finish, all who will see it begin to mock him, saying, this man began to build and was not able to finish. The reason being, of course, because he failed at the beginning to count what it was going to cost. Or what king going out to encounter another king in war will not sit down first and deliberate whether he is able with 10,000 to meet him who comes against him with 20,000? And if not, while the other is yet a great way off, he sends a delegation and asks for terms of peace. So therefore, any one of you who does not renounce all that he has cannot be my disciple. Another way of saying that is anyone who does not renounce all that he has cannot choose me. Jesus is being followed here by a great crowd of people, which will thin out considerably, by the way, as John will tell us at the end of John chapter 6. But he's being followed by a great crowd, every one of them who says, I choose you, Jesus. And they're choosing him by their actions. How many of us were at men's retreat last weekend when Aubrey talked about how important it is for us to understand that whatever our intent is, what matters most, guys, are actions, right? It's not our intent that's going to tell people what our true choices in life are, but rather it's our actions. And at this point, at least, these people are saying, hey, I choose you. Jesus, I'm with you. I'm in your crowd. And we're in that group too, aren't we? Not literally in this group, but we're in the group that says, hey, Jesus, I choose you. And so to those who choose him, Jesus turns, and what does he say to them? He says, here's what that choice means. You people need to understand, Jesus says to us, what that choice means. That choice has implications and it has consequences. And I tell you what, Jesus says, this is a big deal. It's not to be made flippantly. And it's certainly not to be made just by what we can see with the eyes and what immediate gratification or benefit there may be that comes, because he goes on to say, this is going to be very difficult, disciples. People are going to hate you because of me. In fact, time's coming when they're going to kill you. And they're going to think they're doing God a service by killing you. They're going to kick you out of church. They're not going to let you come to synagogue anymore. You're not going to be welcome among religious people any longer because you're choosing me. So think long and think hard about if you want to stay in this crowd or not. These choices have consequences. See, we choose Jesus, we're choosing an order of priority in life. We understand when Jesus says about hating, right? Doesn't hate his father, his mother, his brothers, sisters, his children, yes, even his own life. Jesus is not talking about that sort of despising that you and I, unfortunately, have experienced in our own hearts too many times. He's not talking about a complete and total rejection. Jesus is simply talking about a priority of choice. You're going to come after me. Jesus says, I'm first before everyone. In a very different context in John chapter 6, Jesus is going to be talking about those who have to drink his blood and eat his flesh in order to take part in him. That's the context in which in verse 66, in fact, of John, it says, many who formerly were his disciples didn't follow him any longer. They made a choice. They were presented with the options. They were presented with what it was going to mean, the level of commitment it was going to take. And what did they say? They said no. But at least they counted the cost. Jesus is simply talking about priority. If we truly are his, if we truly have chosen him, then Jesus says, I'm first. And I read that and I'm convicted, because I know in my life and possibly in other lives in this room, although that is my intent, guys, my actions often betray other choices. Choosing other things over Christ. Some of us this morning surely are devoted first to our work. Work's a great thing. Work's a blessing from God. Work is a necessary, can we say it, a necessary evil, right? But it's not first. And I imagine if we were to poll every man and woman, every worker in here this morning and ask each of us, is work the most important thing in your life? I think none of us would say yes. All of us would say no, it's not. But how many of us, our lives bear out something very different than that? Some of us devoted first to our families. Man, that's the hard one, isn't it? Moms and dads, those sweet boys and girls. It's hard. We know Jesus is not saying to reject them. Rather, Jesus is saying in order for them to be properly loved, they need to be put in proper priority. And Jesus says, I'm first. And if we were to ask this morning, I think, same question, but instead of about work, are you devoted more to family than to God? Maybe none of us would admit it aloud. But for how many of us would our actions betray a different choice? Maybe some of us are devoted first to ourselves, our own gratification. What can I get? How much of it can I get? How quickly can I get it? And how much of it can I keep? It's the American way, isn't it? I'll just say it's the human way for the most part. It's the way we are naturally. And again, if the question was asked, I don't know if any of us would admit it, but you know what I'm going to ask next. What do our actions tell us and tell others? I wonder, too, how many of us are devoted more to country than we are to the kingdom of God. None of us would say, I'm devoted more to my country in the USA than I am to the kingdom of God. But how many of us act in such a way that our lives say very different? I'm challenged by that, you know. I'm challenged by Peter's words describing those peoples being aliens and strangers, right? I'm challenged by brothers and sisters in this past century and the centuries before who've gone all over the world and all over our own country with an understanding that this is not our home. It's just a place through which we're passing. None of us would put that before God with our words, surely, but with our actions. How often do we express the reality that there are so many things in life that we treat as more important and higher priority than God? Jesus says, you choose me, here's the deal. He says, I'm first. Joshua says, you know, set aside those other gods. Those across the river, those on this side of the river, the ones where you're living right now, the gods of the Amorites, whom God has driven out, by the way. Make a choice today, he says. Joshua says, my family and me, we're going to serve the Lord. Capital L-O-R-D, Jehovah God. We will serve Him. You have to decide too, Joshua says. Well, we have decided. We're serving the Lord too, Joshua. Joshua says, no, you're not. It's just, look at your actions. Look at your lives. You talk a nice game. You sing a great song, but when the rubber meets the road, the world looks at you, Joshua says, and you're definitely not serving Jehovah. And they say, yeah, we're going to do this. Today, we commit today. And so as we read earlier, they make a pact. They make a covenant. They build an altar. And they say, see that rock yonder? That rock has heard everything God has said, and it sees everything that you and I do. That's our witness, and it's not going anywhere. Maybe today we need a rock, you know? A witness. Something that'll hold us accountable for all the things that we say we are. All the choices that we express. For the sake of God, for the sake of Christ, for the sake of following Him. Maybe there are those among us this morning who need that rock as a witness against that which we may act out that contravenes what we say we are. We make choices every single day. All of them have a consequence or consequences. Most of us this morning have already chosen to become followers of Jesus. You know, He's chosen us, right? God chose us through Christ. We're just kind of taking part in the choosing, I guess is a better way to say it. But we've made a choice. Do we understand what that means? What that requires of us? What God demands? What He expects? What is necessary? Is that He is first. Some this morning are not Christians. Maybe not the most evangelistic sermon in the world, you know? But I think it's fair. Before folks make the most important decision that ever will be made, I think it's fair that you know up front that Jesus says, here's the deal. I'll come first. That's what it's got to be. Maybe that doesn't frighten you this morning. If you're not a Christian and that doesn't frighten you, well, come on. Come this morning and confess Jesus. Come this morning and make a commitment of repentance. Come this morning, be immersed in water. Allow God to cleanse and to transform through that act of faith. Come this morning and make that greatest choice ever, understanding the gravity of the choice. Whoever we are, though, Christians or not yet, today we need to choose. Today. If you need to come, please do so while we stand and sing.